November? Atlanta, what's going on? It's Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. We're talking about the Falcons. That is a running joke now after us talking about the comments of Dan Orlowski. But if you're wondering what the latest is with the Falcons, look, Kevin Stefanski wants a couple of things. One, he wants more energy, more urgency. Mm-hmm. And so do we. It's what we were lacking in that first preseason game. Execution, that's a whole nother conversation, and maybe we'll be better this week as they practice with the Indianapolis Colts. That'll happen over the next couple of days, guys, and yes, we'll be getting reports and trying to figure out and fill in the blanks in between. But as Mike said, there's going to be a lot of work done behind the scenes that we're not going to be able to see. And so part of this is, are we getting in the work we need? The other thing that's going on with the Falcons, Mike, is you know, you and I had a great conversation off the air today. We brought it to the air as we do because there are, you know, shows in this city that are afraid to do things that we do. And at the end of the day, when you start talking about your expectations for this team, what is your gut feeling? And Mike said to me today in a very serious tone, because we joke around all the time, he said, look, I think that they may be thinking that this is a gap year. And I literally got upset this morning. Because I was like, I don't want to hear this. Like, we're vested in this team. Right. That's the last thing I want to hear is that we're going to win 5 or 6 games, and then all of a sudden we're pushing towards next season. And I always tell you guys this. Hell, I don't know where I'm going to be. You don't know where you're going to be. I want to win right now. But lay out the facts for our listeners why you feel this way.
Right. Now, as we joked around in the spring, I said, like, I'm not going to be the hype guy this year. And then every year I kind of get caught up in practice and I see some things I really like. And you get amped up. And remember last year we came off that Titans scrimmage and Penix looked really good. And they were, okay, we got a leader on this team and he's grabbing that role after the weirdness of the previous year. I got to be honest, I've been fighting the feeling to tell this on the radio. And I said, well, the hell it, I'll just let the chips fall. I think this is going to be a gap year. Now, what does that mean? Well, they're not going to tell you that. Matt Ryan and Ian Cunningham are going to have for these introductory press conferences and go, you know, we looked at this team and we got some really good things here, but we're missing in some other areas. But that's true. We have got some really good pieces. They invested in those pieces. Bijan's one of the best players in the league. They believe in Drake. They believe in Pitts. They decided to do more than just franchise tag. And we got a really good offensive line. They invested in Bergeron. We're going to find out if Juwan Taylor can reinvent himself. He is listed as number one, by the way, on the newest depth chart. Get you ready for Saturday in Indy, by the way.
Remember, coach doesn't make those out.
Supposedly not. But I told Carl, I said, we don't look like we're good against the run. You know, I mean, we're trying to money ball a pass rush, and we pick up Za'Darius Smith, who, you know, 7 years ago was one of the elite players in the league, 70.5 sacks. Hopefully he can give us what Calais Campbell gave us a couple of years ago, but be solid. But guys, we don't have a quarterback. We don't know who the quarterback is. Is Tua going to catch his old form? Is Michael Penix Jr. ever going to be out there to start and be healthy? Either healthy in his own mind or cleared by the doctors to be there. So when Vegas hits it at 6.5, and I've been wrestling with this because I never bet against the team. I never go under. I got to be honest. I don't see a lot of wins for this team. I think we'll be probably 7 wins. Because I just think we have core playmakers, but we're missing in some key areas. And when you don't have a quarterback and know what your quarterback is going to be, then you're dead in the water. Until you prove me otherwise. I hope I'm wrong. But that's what I was feeling. I said it today to Carl, and we were talking about it all day. I just don't see it.
Here's what's interesting. So most of you who've been paying attention believe that Tua is going to start the season. Right? I've been telling you way back when that I'm giving him a chance to prove to us that he can still play, that he can do this job, and hopefully we win some games. But they've not named a starter, and my question is why? If you think or know that this timetable continues to be pushed back and the realistic possibilities of Michael Penix starting week 1 are unrealistic, then why not name Tua of the starter? I asked this question a week ago. I'll move it forward, Mike. What are we waiting on? There is no timetable to name a starter. And if the guy who's the other candidate can't participate in 11-on-11, then why not? So here is Coach Stefanski answering a question that I don't think he answered. When asked about, hey, coach, what do you need to see before you name QB1?
I'd just say we're continuing on our process, continuing where we are, keeping the main thing, which is these practices. The practices this week, I think, again, will be good for everybody, including the quarterbacks, going up against a defense that they haven't seen. So all of this is important as we get ready for week 1.
Look, I do think it's important, but, coach, you didn't answer that. What do you need to see? What do you need to see from Tua that goes, hey, look, we know Michael's where he's at, mm-hmm. but Tua's shown us everything. He's QB1. What are the things, Mike, that you need to see? And he just basically shuffled around that and said, hey, it's important week, and we get that, and you're going to go practice with another team and get some work in. That's fine. But you didn't tell us what you need to see. And if you need to see it from this guy, do you need to see it from that guy too? So as you talk about this gap year thing, I just want to address this. I'm with you. I hope it's not. And I appreciate you sharing those true feelings because, like I said, a lot of people don't want to say that. They're, like, afraid to. My thing with this is so much has to go right for you next year for you to get everything you want. And there's no guarantee that if we do have a gap year that you're going to get the quarterback you want in the draft, that we're going to have a top pick, that you're going to be able to go get the top free agents just because we have a lot of money. And the idea is everything's going to fall into place. Gap years don't happen on purpose.
Right.
So I am not willing as a fan to accept that, knowing, Mike, that, hey, last few years we've been talking about winning this division, and if we would have done this, and if a coaching decision would have been made, and if a kicker would have made a kick, and now we got to take a potential year? That's my issue.
I just think that you've got to look from the front office standpoint. And by the way, you know, they've done some really good things they haven't done historically with the Falcons, voidable years in the contract, where everyone who watches the business side of it says we're in a great place financially coming out of the – let's be honest. The Cousins thing was a debacle, and it jammed us up with the cap. They didn't overcommit. They did everybody on sort of prove-it-year deals. The only guy who got a multi-year deal was Jahan Dotson. To me, that kind of signaled back, you know, in the spring that this is kind of a gap year, you know? And then we hear Michael Penix Jr. saying, you know, hey, yeah, I've got to get my head right. We heard the conversation with him and Cam Newton. Cam knows what it's like to come back from an injury. But, I mean, is Michael right with his mentals where he's going to be able to push the envelope a little bit? And get out there, or are they going to strictly stick it by the numbers with the doctors?
Mm.
I mean, again, only time will tell there. But again, how much do you see of Michael this year and then say, oh, I'm really good. I don't need to draft a quarterback next year. We've got our guy who's coming off, you know, off an injury and has had three knee injuries and is a very injury-prone guy. Do you still feel that you're building on sand, or you're building on bedrock at your quarterback?
That's a good question. You can chime in, 404-726-0929. Many of you...
Right.
Earlier in the show today, and we appreciate all the phone calls and interaction, look, you had a lot to say. And part of it is that many of you agree with him. Maybe you've been talking to your boys about this. Maybe you've been talking to your family, and you're saying, you know what? I like a lot of things on this team. But at the end of the day, man, we ain't going to be good till next year. Next year? We got to wait?
Well, I mean, look, Jalen, and the part of this is they never would have foreseen the Jalen Walker thing. I think they were feeling that Jalen Walker was going to be a big part of a good young emerging pass rush. They knew that Pierce was going to be on ice for maybe half the season. They knew something was coming down with Pierce. We get that. But, you know, are we good against the run? Are we going to be able to stop? Well, last year we couldn't stop the run to save our lives. You know, that's a concern for me. The skill positions, I think we're in a great spot. We raised the floor with the wide receiver, but it's a moot point if their quarterback isn't any good.
Yep, it's true. Frank in Fayetteville wants to join the show. And, Frank, we appreciate you listening to Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hey, man, what are your thoughts on this?
Hey, guys, I appreciate it. Hey, I don't have a problem with it because, you know, we can start building our lines of scrimmage, start building some depth because we don't have to put a whole lot of money to a quarterback until, you know, later on. So let's build our team from ground up, get us a quarterback in a year or two from now, then go from there and build some depth on that.
All right.
He's cool with pay. I mean, look, again, it just sucks because some folks will say, look, that's 9 years without the playoffs.
Correct. It's a long time. And, right. and you still have time, by the way, if you want to keep Michael Penix and you believe that he is the guy.
Isn't it May is the deadline that'll pick up the fifth-year option?
Next year. You right. pick up the fifth-year option, but you don't have to extend him until after the fifth-year option is done. That's two seasons. So if you really wanted to invest into that and say, hey, we've got plenty of time, and I know, Mike, we feel like as fans – we don't have that time. There are teams who know 3 years in, this dude's the guy. Right?
Right.
And then we're falling into this situation where we will be going into year four, year five, you pick up the fifth year option because it's still fairly cheap, you know, according to quarterback standards with what guys are getting. And you do that based on the fact, like Kyle Pitts, we're going to pick up the fifth year option. We didn't know they were going to give him an extension, but it made sense based on, all right, you know what? It's still cheap. Let's see what he has. And we were all under the impression, Mike, that they're going to figure out what he is. They went above and beyond that and said, we're going to go ahead and give you an extension. Now, again, it's not as long as some people make it out to be. But the Penix thing, you still have legitimately 2 more years if you wanted to figure that out if you're still trying to build your football team.
Right, but he's got to get out there. I mean, I've got to – guys, it's so funny if you take yourself out of where how you feel about Penix, for guys that are just only locked in on Penix, you feel that you have the same confidence in J.J. McCarthy you have in Penix. You're in the same situation.
I don't think McCarthy's any good. I think Penix can play when healthy. I told you that from day one. I don't think that McCarthy can play.
You didn't like his game from the jump. And remember, he popped in preseason a couple years ago, got everybody all fired up, excited, named the starter, and then obviously can't stay on the field.
Yeah, I feel differently about Penix, despite the two of Michael Penix thing. The thing about McCarthy, and I said this to you, he had a coach who believed in a run game in college and protected him. They never asked him in college to go throw for 350 yards.
And Penix had to do that. And didn't
every game.
And the last game of the season, they didn't even have a full, healthy running back. That's why Penix got beat up in that national championship game.
Yeah.
But anyway, you still got to get on the field. We still be able to have to evaluate him. And two things about this, this is two things being true, two things about the quarterback. Either this regime believes in him or he's got to prove it to them because they didn't draft him. They don't owe him anything. They're not going to say anything negative about him publicly, but they might behind closed doors not believe in him.
And that we don't know. John in LaGrange, how are you feeling about this? Gap year, you buy that, John? Welcome in. Hey, man.
I don't buy that. I'll tell you this. This is what I think. This is what I believe. I believe the coaching staff, all the way up to Matty Ice, knows that Tua is going to get the job. They're just saving face because the problem is, and a lot of people are going to get PO'd when I say this, Michael Penix is scared of the boogeyman because when he talked to Cam and he said, I feel right.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to get it in my head.
You're right.
To where he's scared of the boogeyman. And that's all I got.
Good stuff. Look, we discussed this. I don't want to over psychoanalyze this because, again, I'm not sitting down with him and he's not sitting on my couch. But it was concerning because physically, if I feel fine, then mentally I should be in a place where I can go challenge that. And he said, you know, the first time he had an ACL, he didn't realize he could do the things he needed to do until he got hit.
Right.
Well, he ain't come close to being hit since he got injured. He ain't come close to having anybody come close to touching him. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to disagree with that assessment. You know, you call it the boogeyman. I just call it it's stuff from your past that affects your future.
Right.
And you think about it differently. And I think he can get over it. But, Mike, I don't know when.
Right. And again, the comments, he's been very forthcoming. I said almost maybe he needs to dial it back a little bit, letting everybody in on where his head is at. Everyone's been through this. We call that the Tom Cruise analogy. You got to overcome adversity, get your confidence, get back out there. When? Dan Orlovsky goes on ESPN. I don't know if he's got some insight on this that we're not aware of, but he said November.
November?
I'm like, if I got to wait till November to see Penix Jr., then something's seriously wrong with this season.
Something's going on. All right, man. You guys can tell us. Text us 404-726-0929. Follow Mike, ATL Bell, 929. Put him up. See Dukes. Hit us up, man, and follow the radio show at Dukes and Bell 929 and this radio station to keep up on all the latest news, 929 The Game. We're coming back. What's going on with the Braves, man? Last night,
couldn't hit.
And it got ugly early. Like all of a sudden, first six guys on base and then four guys score. Martin Perez, does he deserve more grace after last night's performance? We'll ask Grant next. Grant McCauley joining us to talk some Braves baseball. This road trip continues. And last night I said, Grant, does Martin Perez deserve some grace after last night's performance, as good as he's been?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And you kind of start to deconstruct that inning. And yes, he made it worse with a couple of early walks. But then some of the hits he gave up, it's not exactly like he was just getting rocked all over the ballpark. And he did what Martin Perez usually does. If he does run into some trouble, he manages to pitch some good innings after that. So it just kind of felt like he got himself into trouble, kind of had the tightrope to walk and got a little bit wobbly. And then, obviously, and I know we'll talk about it, the offense really didn't pick him up.
Yeah, leaving guys on base. And unfortunately, just I didn't like the way they were approaching the at-bats later when they got to the bullpen, too. Like, 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out. You know, it just seemed like they weren't making the pitchers work.
No, they're not. And that's kind of an interesting thing that you bring up. And I did go in-depth on this on From the Diamond because I think we might have noticed, and we didn't get to talk about it, but certainly a lot of Braves fans were curious about going 108 plate appearances without a walk. That seems a little bit extreme, even for a team that's out there hunting pitches early in counts. And that's what the Braves did through the weekend against Arizona until Matt Olson was intentionally walked in Sunday's game. So I went back and looked and tried to figure out, okay, what is it the Braves are doing early in counts? And the answer is they do a lot of damage early in counts. They hit basically 350, over 340 anyway, on first pitches with a ton of home runs, the most home runs in any single count. And then if you look at 0-1 and 1-0, they're also very aggressive there. and do a lot of damage. So early in counts is kind of the Braves' hallmark. And if you look at walks on the whole for the entirety of Major League Baseball, the Braves are 28th in walks this year. So this is kind of who they are. And it's, you know, maybe the best version of it is to get a little bit more there, and it helps you out in the run column. But the Braves have been a top five, top six team in runs scored in Major League Baseball. They are, again, right there this year, and they're right there with the Dodgers and Brewers in terms of overall runs. So there may be some different, maybe unorthodox ways of doing it, but what they have done works, except I guess when it doesn't.
Grant, what's the eventual hope for A.J. Smith-Shawver in regards to where the Braves would like to have him be in this starting rotation? What do we need to see tomorrow?
Yeah, I think you just need to see him continue to do what he's been doing, which has been throwing a lot of strikes, working, I think, pretty efficiently. There haven't been a lot of walks in his minor league time. As I mentioned, he was named International League Pitcher of the Week, for what that's worth. So clearly what he was doing down in Gwinnett was drawing some attention outside of the Braves organization. And he has thrown, I believe it's three really good starts there in a row, in addition to working into the fifth inning in that doubleheader game against the Mets. So I honestly would just tell you, the simple approach that he's been utilizing, don't really change anything. Just continue to do what you've been doing, hammer the strike zone, and I think he's going to find the results, because that stuff plays up. The fastball's in the upper 90s. He's got great breaking stuff, and he can change speeds pretty well. So if he continues to do that and limits the free passes, I think A.J. Smith-Shawver has a chance to really help the Braves out in rotation in a number of different ways, and the first of which is by coming back up and pitching in tomorrow's game. The Braves were able to completely realign their rotation so that Chris Sale will not only start against Milwaukee, but he will also start against the Dodgers in the upcoming series at Truist Park.
Kinley gets DFA'd. Was I too hard on him, or just as a victim of circumstance with some of those blown opportunities?
Yeah, in the words of, who was it, Curly from the Three Stooges, he was a victim of circumstance in a lot of ways, but it did feel like things in the later innings did get a little bit hairy, a little bit slapstick, if you will, with regards to how hard he was getting hit this year. I went in and kind of had looked at the numbers, and his slider was 99th percentile last year in terms of just overall value for that pitch, and it was not that pitch this year. It was, you know, just kind of a mediocre slider. He gave up a lot of home runs on it, 7 of the 9 that he allowed this year, and 9 homers by a relief pitcher who's thrown essentially 40-ish innings. That's a lot of home runs. It's hard to work around that. He just wasn't quite the same guy. He also lost 1 mile an hour on the fastball. Maybe that was a factor for being even more slider reliant, but just not getting, I think, the overall quality innings that you needed to get out of him. And at this point, I think the Braves recognize that there may be some ways, and I don't want to speak for them in terms of their overall, you know, ultimate decision, but whether it's Ronaldo Lopez coming off the IL or eventually Grant Holmes maybe sliding into a relief role, there are at least other options and other conversations to be had. And unfortunately for Tyler Kinley, as good as he was over that first month or 6 weeks, he really just wasn't the same guy throughout the dog days of summer.
Tyler Mahle, I mean, he's been an innings eater, right? And is that what we can expect? Is that the expectation now?
I mean, it's been that and more, though. I mean, you look at these first couple of starts, he's allowed 1 run on a solo homer, handful of hits, 2 walks, and what is it, 16 strikeouts in his first 2 starts. I mean, it's some really impressive stuff, and he has been a strikeout pitcher in the past. He's eclipsed 200 in his career before. It's just been a while, but this is a guy that I think the Braves just felt like it was a buy-low candidate that they could improve upon, and thus far, if you want to credit either what he was doing with San Francisco over the final 6 weeks or what he's been able to maybe uncover with the Braves, this is a guy that I think has that middle-of-the-rotation starter upside, and that's what the Braves were hoping for. He wasn't going to be the front-of-the-rotation ace to go along with Chris Sale, but you also are not going to look that gift horse in the mouth. If he's going to give you performances like this, you'll certainly take him, and it has certainly helped stabilize this rotation. Now you look at adding an A.J. Smith-Shawver into the mix, and again, whatever they want to do with Grant Holmes and Ronaldo Lopez, they'll need to kind of sort that whole thing out. But at least you're feeling like you've got some quality layers of depth, and Tyler Mahle has been a nice get for the Braves at a relatively low cost. If you care about that kind of thing, which I don't think most people do, there was not much that was involved in the acquisition fee to get Tyler Mahle, and he has made an immediate impact on the starting rotation in the past 2 weeks.
I saw the Rays getting a bounce from a former Brave the other night. It was pretty interesting to see. You know, again, I know you got some roster issues, and Kim is still, you know, under contract. He's not going anywhere, but Mateo, if you didn't see, goes yard down there at the old Trop. And I saw Jarvis and Dubon. Dubon was in left, but they went a combined 0 for 6. So what is shortstop right now?
Yeah, that's a good question, and this is another big point of emphasis, I think, down the stretch for the Braves is to sort that out. And I tried to kind of make sense of the moving parts and kind of the carousel from left field to shortstop to DH, because those all feel like they're connected, right? Because you got Mauricio in left field, but you went and got Lane Thomas. Would it not be good to maybe get Lane Thomas some of those at-bats and utilize him a little bit more? I know he's brought in specifically because he's great against lefties, but he's a power bat that could, I think, help out, you know, along with Mike Yastrzemski and kind of solve the left field thing and then free you up to use Mauricio Dubon at shortstop. Because as much as Jim Jarvis was and is a solid defensive shortstop for the most part, offensively, the bloom has been off this rose for a minute here in the month of August. And if everything else is clicking in your lineup, you can afford that. But not everything is clicking in the Braves lineup right now, which I think is kind of why we see Ha-Seong Kim, and for lack of a better term, kind of like a purgatory, because I'm also looking at this just trying to be pragmatic about it. And you are paying this guy $20 million. He started one game since he came back 2 weeks ago. Is that really all you think of him? Because if that's the case, other than the $20 million, I guess my question is, what is the point? And that kind of brings us to Mateo getting squeezed out. It's not like he was a world beater either. He had a couple of nice months and, nice weeks, and I think back in May, but it really quieted down. He's a 220 career hitter with about a 620 career OPS. I mean, he kind of is who he is. He's given the Rays a little bit of a jolt. Maybe he'll catch lightning in a bottle there, and they'll have a little bit of a bump from him, like you said. But he still hasn't gotten a ton of playing time down there in the last couple of weeks either. He's just kind of a role player. I don't think he was going to solve the shortstop question, and I think that the Braves really kind of can look at, all right, if the playoffs start tomorrow, Mauricio Dubon is your starting shortstop, I believe. That means left field is handled between Mike Yastrzemski and Lane Thomas. DH, is that a spot where you could start to get Lane some more at-bats if that's what you need to do? Maybe you can get Sean Murphy some more at-bats behind the plate and let Drake DH some more, because the DH spot, in addition to shortstop, are areas you're not getting the most production from.
When's the last time the Braves played an afternoon game, night game?
I would say sometime in the 1950s, maybe the 60s, if they played a long series at Wrigley Field and then maybe went to St. Louis or something. I don't know. It's uncommon, but that's kind of what this road trip is, right? It's three games against the Twins, and of course you get a rain delay to start with, which scares you about having to play a doubleheader. And then you got to make up the game against the White Sox, and then you go to Milwaukee, but not just Milwaukee. You also got to go to Williamsport. So this is going to be a very bizarre 6 days ahead for the Braves before they get that off day. And their prize for coming home is three games against the LA Dodgers. So it is very much the Braves are in the teeth of a very, very tough part of their schedule.
And Grant, not to get ahead of ourselves, but that's what we do at Sports Talk Radio. We were looking at if season ended right now, we'd play the Phillies in the dreaded 2 out of 3, because we'd be the third seed in the, I mean, to go nearly wire to wire in the division and then be settled in 2 out of 3 just doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't. But unfortunately for Major League Baseball's expanded playoff, with three divisions, one of them was going to be the odd man out. Now, at some point, you talk about realignment into four divisions per league and maybe less emphasis on the wild card, and maybe the division winners are out and there's two wild cards and you still get 12 playoff teams. And I don't know. I mean, you get that revenue that you're looking for. It's just such an imperfect system, but it does really underscore in bold red, and then you can highlight it as well in whatever color you want. Three games against the Brewers, three games against the Dodgers. If you want to really make an impact on what your fate is regarding the wild card and not having to play in that 2 out of 3, winning those series is pretty high on the list of priorities, which is why I think you saw this rotation get shuffled now to create Chris Sale an opportunity to throw in both of those.
All right, brother. Great stuff. I am just like trying to, figure out a lot of the things we're talking about with this team. And I guess over the next month or so, we'll get a chance to figure them out, especially with this pitching staff. I'm curious to see what Shaver has, man. I really am.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. And as the saying goes, only time will tell.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Good stuff, Grant. We appreciate you, man. We'll talk tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to it.
All right, guys.
I was watching a game last night, and it was like there's no action at the ballpark. It was quiet as like a church. You hear that? Like I don't get it. When the Braves are up, you want to – but it was just like, don't make too much noise now. In the Twin Cities, don't you know?
It was
not exactly a really intimidating atmosphere.
It was different. Right. All right, guys. Coming up, we'll fill in the blanks, guys. A couple of things going on around the world of sports. Mike mentioned it yesterday late in the show, and we were like, wow, Lakers being sold. Not so fast.
Yep.
All right, that and much more. Stay there. Stukes and Bill. Appreciate all the input and text messages and responses in regards to the Falcons, who are getting ready tomorrow. We'll be talking more about them being an Indy, guys. and these joint practices. Again, hopefully we'll find out a little bit more about our team, Mike, but a bunch of guys, you know, talking about our conversation, and a bunch of folks, should I say, men and women, who listen to the show, talking about our conversation in regards to the Falcons. I thought the funniest tweet of the day was from Allison earlier in the day when she said, if this is a gap year, Mike, then I want gap prices on my season tickets.
Well, just hold off on that one there, Allison. That's not going to be forthcoming. I mean, like I said, I've been wrestling with my conscience, Carl, about this. And I was joking around today on our pre-show. We do it on YouTube and Twitch. It's called Behind the Curtain. So I dropped it on Day Day and Carl today, and I said, "Well, just say it on the air." I believe me, I'm a Falcon fan. We got season. If you're new to the show, maybe we take it for granted. You know this. We have season tickets. You know, that was the first time I was up in the press box. That stadium's been around since 17.
Oh, when we did the high school games,
yeah, last week for Corky Kell. Yeah, yeah. We're fans. You know, we're fans. We're also journalists, but we have fun doing it. But we want to see this team win. And a guy, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong about Michael Penix. Hope Michael Penix has a long career as a Falcon, and it all starts this season. Hopefully not in November, according to Dan Orlovsky.
November?
But it's just a lot of stuff. A lot of things that just aren't 100% right now about this football team, regardless of what we saw. It has nothing to do with one game, a meaningless preseason game. I'm just talking about where's the pass rush. That's why they went and signed who they signed today. Who did they sign today?
It was Za'Darius Smith.
Za'Darius Smith. Sorry, I have it in front of me. Yeah. But Za'Darius Smith, 70.5 sacks, a guy that Stefanski knows from his time in Cleveland, a guy that, you know, a couple of years ago was one of the preeminent pass rushers in the league and still has had a hell of a career.
No, he's been and look, I commend him for this because, again, they could have sat on their hands and said, we got everybody we need in-house, which maybe they do. But you still need depth. You still need reinforcements. And here's the thing. I've said this. This idea like James Pierce Jr., he might, after the 8-week suspension, be right back out there. But I don't know. It could be 9 weeks before we see him. So,
right. How do they ramp it up?
Yeah.
I mean, he balls out. Does he pick up where he left off? Does he struggle? You know, is Tua going to become the starting quarterback and then he's going to relinquish the job? As I said, I don't think Falcon fans expect this season to be a workshop for Michael Penix.
No.
But if it is, that's a gap year. That's why I said what I said.
All right, what's going on with this Lakers situation? Just real quick.
Okay, Jeannie Buss is really smart, and her brothers aren't.
Okay.
And she basically says, I'm not ready to sell out, but it's the majority. It's basically, it is exactly like the movie or the HBO series Succession, where the majority rules, and the owner who is selling after making, you know, buying the Lakers for 10, selling for 12, is getting out, and Jeannie Buss is not prepared to get out of the basketball business. And I guess they're 18% controlling, or they're 18% controlling interest.
Five of the six members of the family in this trust are united in their decision. And that statement comes in wake of Jeannie Buss. She is the current governor, of the team, and the only sibling to abstain from the vote to sell. So, Mike, if one says no, then that means they don't go. That's how this usually works. And look, you know, Johnny, Jimmy, Janie, Joey, Jesse, and I'm not, that's not a rock band. That's the family members, okay? Made the decision to sell the family's remaining stakes, and they said we remain united. It's just, this is a family mess. And here's the moral of the story. For poor folks and rich people, get your business straight.
Yes.
Right? Dad left this in a way that they could have this for the rest of their lives and their kids' kids. And you know, the statement yesterday, Mike and I were talking about, well, we're just trying to get out, you know, while we're able. And you're like, okay, well, you guys are already filthy. You don't ever have to worry about any money.
Right.
I think Jeannie Buss, to your point, is the only one that understands the legacy part of this.
Right.
Right? And she's not in it to get another couple of billion dollars or a couple of million dollars. I think that the stake that they own, Mike, is worth, I don't know, $25, $30 million. But regardless, her being the governor, she still has a say. And that's a part of that about this. And I don't know how this is going to go down, but man, it seems like it's a mess. And by the way, give credit to who we're talking about, Dede Shelburne, Ramona. She's been all over this. And the crazy thing is today, I think Shams went on Pat McAfee and was like, no, I'm defending this. This is the story.
So you got ESPN on ESPN violence.
That's exactly right.
You got one reporter saying, I got it right. The other one saying, oh, I've got it right. Interesting.
Mm. Yeah. and I don't know at this point who has it right, but this is the new reporting that five Buss siblings are united in selling the shares. Jeannie's like, no, we're not. and we'll see where it goes.
17.8% of what would be valued at $12 billion. So that's a nice chunk of change.
It's a little bit of money.
Yeah, it's a lot more than 30 mil. But no, it just, and again, the Jeff Perlman, again, Jeff Perlman doesn't get everything right, but there's been multiple stories written about the Buss family over the years and how, you know, for years the sons were kind of favored over Jeannie, and they kind of showed it in the docudrama on HBO about how she actually was really sharp and did really good work, first with the tennis team that he owned and then getting involved with the Lakers. And, you know, she's been a really astute business person.
Yep.
And the other kids seem to be a bit flaky, and that's the way they've been always been portrayed. So now they want to cash in.
All right. For those who missed it, a couple of things about Georgia. We had Connor Riley on today talking about what's going on with practices. And one of the things that came out is Progressive is going to be involved with Georgia.
Yes, it's still a giant G. Despite the memes you've seen, there'll be no giant face of Flo on the 50-yard line at Sanford Stadium. We're not going to make jokes about car issues with insurance and insurance companies. It's been a fatality and a tragedy. But people have jokes basically saying, ironic, they would Progressive even insure the Georgia football drivers. But those, not our jokes, their jokes.
Yeah. And Cole Spear, Mike, added to the roster, according to our buddy Rusty Manziel of UGASports.com, by the way. What's up, Rusty? But Spear spent the previous four seasons at Georgia playing largely a special team standout. He blocked a punt last year's SEC championship game, but they added him, and it's something else we were talking about today with Connor Riley. Go check out the full interview. But the whole deal was the offense apparently didn't look great in that first scrimmage. And everybody was saying, oh, the people who were there with their own eyes were like, defense kind of – and it's to be expected. I said this. The defense is going to be good.
And Jimmy generally has the edge the first couple of weeks of practice.
I want to see what happens this weekend. When they get this second scrimmage and what happens with the offense. But I don't think dog fans should be concerned at all. This is just part of it. Every year I feel like we have this conversation with Kirby in that first scrimmage where Kirby's going off. They didn't look good. And then they come out and they blow doors.
And Jameer Dean, a big-time wide receiver recruit for Georgia out of Alcoa High School in Eastern Tennessee.
Yeah.
Same school as Randall Cobb, according to our man Rusty Manziel. But apparently this guy's all-world. That's a recruit for this next year for UGA football.
That's a big one, right? That's
supposedly.
A big one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Spear kid added an extra year of eligibility after Colorado judge temporarily granted all 2022 signees a fifth year of eligibility.
Bingo. That's the big defensive player that came back to Indiana under the same rule.
Yeah, that's what the deal is. Tomorrow, by the way, we will be talking more Falcons, obviously. These joint practices are important. As I said, we'll be getting tidbits, not the full, you know, Miguel, as far as what's going down. But this is what we do know already. And Kevin Stefanski said it. Michael Penix will only participate in 7-on-7. We already know that. So if you're expecting to hear something new in regards to Penix and playing 11-on-11, Mike, that's not going to happen this week.
No, and again, we would love to know that we have a real competition. And that's maybe why I'm so down on this team right now. Well, we just never got the competition we wanted to see. We wanted to see Tua. Here's Tua. Here's Penix. We can come on the radio and go, hey, man, saw Penix do this. He did this better than Tua. Saw Tua do this, yada, yada, yada.
Sure.
We haven't had that yet. It's not apple. It's apples to oranges. We haven't been able to go Tua versus Penix Jr. And look, Jack Strand, he's still learning the game at this level. I know he's the backup. Backup is always everybody's favorite. Cooper Rush didn't look good at all in that first preseason game. And you want to see improvement, but you're not going to get to see Tua or Penix. And you're not going to get to see a bunch of guys in this game on Saturday night because all the work is going to go on at practice. We're talking about practice. Now, we will talk. Day-Day, who's coming on the show from the Colts TV and radio? It's Greg Rakestraw is a guy that's up there in Indy. Hopefully he'll have eyes on this stuff so he can tell us what we saw. So he can tell us what he saw and we'll know what's happening up there.
Yeah. And by the way, we're not – please understand this. The Za'Darius Smith signing is a smart signing. They're trying to help this pass rush knowing that Jeff Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator, did an amazing job last year. Nobody expected us to be second in the league in sacks. Now, it didn't result in a playoff run, but – you're trying to fill the void of two rookies that really popped for you last year and, you know, James Pierce suspension. So just so people get the sense, like, we're just mentioning it. It's a big deal. Hopefully he can come in here and play. But remember, he's 34 years old now.
As I said, I mean, I wasn't being a wise ass. I mean, if we could have gotten him, you know, back in 18 or 19, that would have been the time to pick. I mean, again, he's a stud.
And he retired five games in last year.
And Stefanski knows him from Cleveland, so there's familiarity there. But you got, you've got some dudes. Brandon Dorlus is technically, you know, he's kind of defensive lineman, but he can be an edge guy. He gave us 9 sacks last year. Ebukam, you got a bunch of guys on prove-it deals. Ojulari, who Georgia fans are familiar with. So, you know, you missed Jalen Walker. They knew Pierce was going to be out, so this is why. They get a guy that, but does it bother you that he tapped out last year?
No, I think that's where his head was. And then, you know, you get a break, Mike, your body feels good, and all of a sudden.
You want to get back in it. Yeah. Everybody wants to retire after the last game of the season.
So I don't blame him on that. I just hope he can come in here. I know he's probably motivated to get back at it, and hopefully he can help us. But it's not an under-the-table kind of deal. It's a good signing. Hopefully he can come help us. All right, man, we got to get out of the way. Turtle's got a full show tonight, Big O. Full four, so stay here. Turtle has got you covered. Let's get out of here, man, and clear our throat. To Big O behind the glass, our engineer, handling business, man, keeping us on point. Thank you, sir. Day Day Executive Producing. And thanks to you for listening to Atlanta's number one sports station. It's number one sports show, Dukes and Bell. We're back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Will we have a deep philosophical conversation tomorrow? Probably not.
Well, it wasn't like I was having like this existential crisis over how I'm going to communicate my feelings about the Falcons.
You were like, I've been thinking.
I hope I'm wrong. I'm just, after the guys, 28 years of me being the hype man for this team. Not this year. I'm not feeling it. The quarterback is the thing until I know. And if maybe, Carl, we'll revisit this thought process when we know who the freaking quarterback's going
to
be.
Oh, the quarterback's Tua. We just need to revisit it when this team shows up and plays some damn football. All right, man. Tomorrow we're back at 2. Mike Bell, clear your throat.
Uh-oh. Is this like Michigan with Connor Stallions all over again? A cheating scandal somebody got in Alabama high school football.
Mm.
Guntersville High School's new associate head coach and defensive coordinator had to resign after a public intoxication charge at the ARAB High School football jamboree on Friday night. According to 48 News, the Guntersville City Board had a special meeting, and they said Jerry Folks won't take that resignation. Apparently you were sloshed in public, and apparently he and some other coaches from Guntersville were at the ARAB jamboree, and they was trying to get on that ARAB sideline. Because they're going to play him next week. So the news is, when they said, hey, why are you on the sideline? Folks flash some sort of pass and try to pretend he's in the media, which he ain't. So you're fired. Scandal over there in Alabama.
Speaking of college football, you believe you went up front, right?
Yeah.
What if I told you Georgia has the best offensive line in college football?
Hey.
If you believe that, then you believe they'll be right back in the mix for a national championship. But wait.
There's more.
A lot of people believe Texas also has the best offensive line in college football. Bottom line is, I expect to see these two teams in the SEC championship. Don't want to leave out A&M. They're really good, too. But when Georgia was winning chips, they were running through people and owning the line of scrimmage. And this may be another year where that happens. Hey, if you love the show,
you tell your friends.
If you don't.
He's overserved at the ARAB football jamboree.
So I think both things are true.